why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot. That would just be a print artist?
Better.
Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
All right, Matt, you want to do the intro?
Nope.
All right. I just thought, maybe things will change. Maybe things will change. Hey, everybody. Beards and Comics Podcast is back. It's been a while, and beards are longer, more gray. There's more comics, so I guess those are both great things when the show's called Beards and Comics. We are focusing a little bit more on creativity, and we wanted to bring in somebody that we hadn't spoken to before, but has done a long, long time's worth of work.
Many moons.
Right. So Rob Guillory is with us, and we appreciate you coming over to Beards and Comics.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. We were just talking about how we're all having a case of the Mondays.
All the Mondays.
Yes. Mondays. For people that are tuning in when this drops, we're actually recording this back in November, but we're putting it out in January. So we have a, who knows, once the show actually drops where our lives are, hopefully great. But we're just going to talk about a few different things. The first and most important question that we want to ask you, it's a lighthearted question, and it's what does creativity mean to you?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I mean, I've reflected a lot about this in the last few years, especially post my previous image book shoot. And upon starting my new book, the book I've been working on for the last few years, Farmhand, that I'm writing and drawing. And, I came out of Chew after working on it for 8 years, really considering myself to being a really like creative person. And I figured, I'm going to enter this next phase of life. And I got all these ideas and all this kind of thing. And I looked at all of them and I realized I hated most of them. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that I'm not sure I understand creativity the way I used to. It does seem to sort of, I don't even know how to answer that question. I mean, you're starting in really deep waters right off the bat. So
we said lighthearted. We meant cannonball into it is what we meant.
Right. Let's keep going and we'll circle back to that question.
All right. So let's start with the real question. What pencil do you use? Mm. No, I'm just kidding.
I can answer that.
The normal artist question that everybody gets.
Yeah. You don't know us, but we own and operate Catalyst Comic Studio. I'm a writer and I do editing as well. And then Matt is an artist. So he actually probably does want to know what pencil you use.
I mean, it was whatever. I like seeing all these comic pages on the back wall. I feel like you're living that, like, man, that's a good idea. I should do something like that. So I forced myself to be like, oh, I need another page. It's just that constant drive of like, it looks like you have a nice, simple kind of setup, just something you don't need all the bells and whistles. You just sit down and knock it out.
Yeah. This is actually my home office. We have a bonus room upstairs. So whenever I have a remote office as well, away from home, but I tend to spend most of my time here, just because it's easier with the kids and everything. I've streamlined a lot in the last few years, right before COVID, because I used to have a different studio right before COVID, and it was a bit more of everything. And moving out of it was a complete pain in the butt. And I just kind of sloughed off a ton of stuff and put a bunch of stuff in storage and just decided, I don't think I need all of that. The smaller, the better, the easier to kind of move around. So I kind of go back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, I have that horrible artist problem where I just collect, like you want to try every brush, you want to try every pencil, it's just something to keep you motivated to keep like, oh, let me see what this works. Let me see if I like this. And then you like it and then you buy a bunch of it and then you never touch it again.
Every artist I know has been looking. We've been looking for the perfect pen our entire lives.
Always.
And I still haven't. I haven't found it. I haven't found it yet, but I'm still looking. Yeah.
Look, as a writer, friction pens and a rocket book has been my new best friend for the last like 2 months. Just because I can write with my normal handwriting on just a notebook, and then my phone scans it in and transcribes it. And that's just beautiful for meetings and for writing in general.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I mean, it's easy to, I think every creative sort of has that kind of fetish, but for pens, notebooks, I'm a backpack guy. I love a good backpack, a good carrying bag kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was actually looking at the Remarkable tablets with the digital ink. Mm-hmm. I was looking at that over the weekend. I don't think I'll ever pull the trigger on it, but I like staring at it on Instagram from time to time.
Right.
Just thinking about what I could do with it, probably.
Now, are you all traditional, or do you do digital cleanups? Do you ink digitally? I see a lot of ink, you know, hand ink stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I pencil and ink everything by hand, and I'll scan it in, clean it up a little bit in Photoshop, and color. If I'm coloring it, it's all going to be digital for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's...
I like getting my hands. I like getting my hands dirty.
Did you ever try doing it digital and then just said it wasn't for me, or has it always just been like, I like the tactile feel of this brush against this paper, and it's the only way it should be.
Yeah, basically that. Yeah. I mean, I tried it out after, right when the pandemic started in 2020. I actually went out and I bought the iPad Pros, and I got the pencil and all that stuff, fell in love with it. And got Procreate, and I love it, but it's just not there. It's a little too perfect. And I just like, I mean, again, this goes back to college. You know, my original degree was going to be in computer animation. And there was this really weird kind of digital wall I used to hit where, like, you know, I was trying to render things on screen that I could draw in 5 seconds. And there's just never, I can never make it. I can never make that jump. And I'm still there to this day. And so I think I'll probably always stay traditional for the most part.
Yeah, that's my, I feel like that's my personal problem. It's just like, I love how easy it is to be able to just, you know, undo, or if I need to fix something, it's so easy. But like, it just doesn't have the same feel as like pencil on paper, especially on Bristol. Mm-hmm. For some reason, mm-hmm. Bristol board, you know, that comic page, that huge sheet, and then like ink on there with a brush or, you know, like pens. It's just, it doesn't make the same marks, and it's never going to.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's
a big... I will say that what I have been considering experimenting with, and I've seen a lot of guys start to do, is starting to actually work out the rough layouts in like digitally, and then print that out, and then pencil and ink on top of that. I've never done it, but it seems kind of fun because I just hate, that's the part of the process I completely hate, is just working everything out, you know, breaking up the space and moving in a certain way. Yeah. So that might be a cheat. That might be a cheat I'm into. I just haven't given it a shot yet.
Yeah, it is definitely a lot easier just to like cut, you know, change sizes of your panels, move things around, flip them around, you know. Oh, this character is too big. Let me bring him down a little bit and flip this over and, you know, oh, boom. Yeah. Let me print it out light blue and then ink over it. So,
yeah.
That's what whiteout's for.
Right. Right. That too.
Yeah.
Let's get the X-Acto knife out and cut and paste like the old days.
Let's talk a little bit about how you approach world building. And you can take that for any of the things that you've worked on, but just, I guess, a general outlook.
Okay. Well, with Farmhand, it kind of just started from a basic premise. I mean, obviously, it always starts from just one simple thing and kind of sprouts out from there. So the basic premise with Farmhand, for anyone who doesn't know, is you have a farmer who grows human body parts, so plug and play organs. So immediately when I kind of shaped that and came up with that concept, the first question was, okay, who's the farmer? You know, what's his deal? What's his backstory? Why would he do something like this? And once I started asking those questions and I found out who he was, I was able to then turn to his family and say, okay, so maybe he's got some kind of God complex. You know, he really gets off on having that sort of power to kind of heal people with this technology. Maybe his home life is a complete wreck. So what does that look like? So you start asking questions about his family, you know, well, maybe he's got an estranged, he's got to have an estranged relationship with his son or with his kids in general, right? So you go there. And then from there, I started kind of shaping everything else. You know, who else is in his circle? You know, he probably has, you know, he's bound to have one guy who is like really close to him, like a brother, who is just kept telling him it's a bad idea. Like, don't do this, because there's always that one guy.
Yep.
So, you know, I basically everything stems from that. Like, I just kind of move around and I look at the circle of who's closest to that main character. And I just ask questions. And as I start moving outward, it goes to the town. It goes to, you know, the actual business that he's selling the organs through. What is the town that he's in like? What's the economy like? What is his relationship to it, or even his history? Like, was he born there? If he was born there, what's his family history there in general? Like, is the family regarded as in a good sense? Are they hated? What is that like? So it just kind of moves outward that way. But I haven't, I mean, I have a new book coming out that we can talk a bit about that I haven't really, I announced it a couple of weeks ago, but I haven't really talked much about it. So the new book is coming out from Boom Studios next year in January. I guess probably around the time this will go up.
Right.
It's a book called Right. It's called Mosley. And the basic premise is it basically started, well, I'll go back. The premise originated from something in my real life. I have three kids. Any podcast you've ever watched with me, they always come up, because that's pretty much where I live right now, is with the in that phase of life. So, you know, raising up these kids in today's world with technology, technology is the biggest blessing and curse that I'm dealing with at the present time, especially with my oldest, who's 11. I've had to kind of, he's brilliant. He's really good at technology. Probably he'll be better than I am at it. So I've had to kind of wrestle with that whole thing. So the seed of the idea for Mosley came from my frustration with having to raise him with technology and sort of protect him from technology at the same time. So I started just kind of envisioning myself as like, there are days I just wish it would go away.
Right.
I just want to be the guy with a hammer running around breaking technology, essentially. And, you know, so I kind of came up with this guilty pleasure of a comic of, you know, I just had this guy running around who hates tech, who's just going to destroy tech. And it grew from that. And I started thinking, well, who's the guy, you know, because, again, that's how I work. You know, it starts from the premise. But then I started thinking, who's the guy? Who's the people? Who are the main characters? So I thought, well, you know, if it's a future where technology is just run rampant, you know, who's the guy that's going to be anti-tech? He'd probably be the opposite of like a Mark Zuckerberg or a Jack Dorsey. He'd probably be like a janitor or something. He is a janitor. Yeah, he's absolutely a janitor. He's a guy named Marvin Mosley. He's currently in the story, which takes place in the future. He's a janitor who comes in the possession of this mystical hammer. And he goes on this, basically on a mission from God to destroy these tech, these robots that are basically taking over the world. And, you know, it all kind of stemmed from that one little seed. You know, it all kind of grew from that little guilty pleasure, this feeling I had of like frustration. And everything I've ever done always sort of comes from that. So that's Mosley in a nutshell. It kind of grew a bit. It always grows beyond what you planted to grow, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but that's basic premise. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the right way to ask this? Where'd your interest for technology come in? Because where, you know, your new book is about someone that hates it. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, you know, thoughts that you had with your dealing with your kids who are probably going to end up being better with technology than you. But then the depth of bioengineering that you get into with Farmhand, where did that love or idea come from?
A lot of my earliest stories that I gravitated toward were things like Frankenstein. Jurassic Park was very influential when I was a kid. What else? What's another one? I had one, but I blanked. But there were a few. There were a few that were really, really influential. And I kept going back to this idea of, you know, we just keep overshooting. like we just never know, like, the limits of it. Always goes further than you intend. Terminator 2 was really big. When I was growing up as well, I was a big James Cameron guy. So that theme kept coming up over and over and over again. And the more I kind of started looking at life in reality, I saw that it was actually really true. Like, that really is how we work. You know, for whatever reason, humanity's kind of bent in a certain way to where, you know, we can make these amazing things, but for whatever reason, we never know when to stop.
Right.
You know, we just think, what's the line from Jurassic Park that Jeff Goldblum says? He says, you know, you're so busy being fascinated by what you could do, you never stop to ask if you should.
Right.
You never stop. So, I mean, I think that's true. And we're kind of going through that with everything right now in terms of social media and technology.
Yeah. So it's a gift slash curse.
Right. Right. And I'm not anti it. I obviously have tons of technology. I'm for it under the right circumstances. I'm just calling, I think, for more discernment and wisdom in how we're handling this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was your influence, is that how you look at, I guess that would actually play a little bit into your world building as well. You're wrestling with the question of what if this was taken too far?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's kind of tying into what I just said about, you know, the tech stuff really just becomes a manifestation of who we are and what our issues are. You know, in Farmhand, you know, it goes sideways because the guy who created the technology, Jedediah Jenkins, has some significant character flaws.
Right.
He's really messed up. He's super proud. He's super prideful. He has all these issues he doesn't want to deal with, you know, from the loss of his wife. You know, he's got trauma from his own childhood he's not dealing with. He's kind of stuffed all that within himself, and he's just blowing forward, creating this technology to try to kind of, like, you know, cover up his tracks and cover up all the pain he's living in. And then it ends up totally being a manifestation of all of his worst parts, you know, just kind of blown out. And now it's infecting the community, and it's just ruining everything. So I'm sure one day I'll make a happy tech book. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Like, it always keeps coming back to this.
I don't know. I don't know if it'd do as well, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It seems like the ones where technology goes awry are usually the ones people gravitate toward.
Right.
Yeah.
Matt, what you got?
I think you kind of hit the creativity on the head when you were talking about... It seems like I find the most creative people are the ones that can sit there and take their thoughts on what don't I like. And instead of, like, sitting there and just the person that sits there and just says, like, I don't like tech, that's the end of it. Whereas the creative person will say, why don't I like tech? And sit there and deep dive into their thought process of, well, why don't I like it? And instead of taking it and making, like, something, being angry about it or just saying it and then it's going on with your life, we sit there and self-analyze what we're thinking and try to put it into something positive or something, another thought process that somebody else might not have. And I feel like that's really, in my opinion, one of those ways of sitting down instead of just, well, why don't I like tech? Well, let me just sit here and break it down. And it's like, oh man, this is actually, like, I could do something with this. And then you take a negative or something, an emotion that you're feeling. And I feel like that's what makes some of the greatest content. You know, it's not just cookie cutter. You know, you really sit there and go into, what is it that's making me feel this way? It's okay that I feel this way. I'm not a bad person because I hate technology. I'm not mad at somebody because they made it. You know, like, there's goods and bads. There's, you know, stuff like that. So I really like that perspective on it, because I feel like that's one of those things when you're sitting there drawing too or writing, it's kind of the same thing of, like, I've got to get in this character. What is this character thinking? Right. Why is he like that? How does he stand? How does he, his emotions when he's doing anything, or, you know, like, so.
Which, Rob, you seem like the kind of person that gets really far into your character's head, how much of that is a reflection of like you battling with your own demons and your own inner thoughts and things?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's totally connected. Yeah, right. I've always been. Yeah, now I've always been, and I find that probably most creators I know tend to be that way. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of, because you have to go to a very special place to kind of pull this stuff out.
Yeah,
you know, I've always been a guy who was very kind of self-reflective. I mean, I remember being very, very young, and kind of being the guy who kind of sat at the back of the room and just watched the people mm-hmm. around me.
Yep.
And, you know, and I remember being the kid. I literally remember saying this to myself at a very, very young age, because I was just had a lot of stuff going on around me, a lot of adults doing crazy things. And I just remember saying to myself, I'm going to watch what they do and watch their mistakes so I don't have to make the same ones. Yeah. Right. Like I remember thinking this to myself. So I've always been that way. And I think that's why I wrestled so much, even with the question of what is creativity, because mm-hmm. I don't really completely know. I don't think a lot of times that I'm making things. I think that I'm kind of, I feel like as creatives, we're all kind of just processing the world, and we're kind of like processing, you know, we're moving through life and we're taking stuff in, we're trying to make sense of it. And we're, you know, the things we're dealing with kind of come out in these weird amalgams, these characters that are sort of meshes of everything we go through. Like, I think everything I do, I look at all my stuff that I've created on my own. It's all been very reflective of what phase of life I'm in. Like, I can look at Farmhand. I know where I'm at with Farmhand. Like, Farmhand is absolutely me going through, you know, 8 years of, you know, working on Chew. You know, we had all three of our kids on that during that time. Mm-hmm. Went through a lot of stuff during Chew, just personally. You know, the second you have kids, you start reflecting on your own childhood. And you start thinking, wow, what were my parents doing? Like, what was that? So Farmhand was, I know exactly what Farmhand was. That's me processing my childhood, processing becoming a father, processing, you know, how do I make peace with my own childhood and my own parents and that sort of thing. So that's Farmhand. And Mosley is me processing, you know, again, raising children, but and dealing with quote unquote progress. You know, I'm dealing with it, but I'm trying to like keep my humanity in the process.
Right.
So everything I'm doing, and maybe that's what creativity is for me. It's just I'm moving through life, I'm moving through space, and I'm just trying to make sense of this stuff through the context of like what I know, which is I know how to write, I know how to draw, I know how to self-reflect, I know how to think, probably too much. So mm-hmm. yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's finally the answer to your first question.
It sounds like, so the reason I ask it as the first question is because I want to see if it changes later on in the conversation. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people that we've talked to when in general conversation, you ask them that question and, you know, it's a hard thing to answer because you can take mm-hmm. any different angle from it. But I feel like similarly, I look at it that way as well, where creativity is just our version of exploring our world or our worldview. That's why it's interesting. I like reading stories from writers that you can tell they put themselves into. I think they're always the best stories, and they're always the most relatable main characters. There's a difference between things that are just written for commercial success and things that are written from like, this is part of who I am as a person. And I like to think that readers can gravitate one way or the other. And I think to some extent they do, and they'll find characters that they relate to more or whatever. I know my lady, she loves Farmhand, and the things that you explore in it are things that she battled as well. And so it was a click for her, and it just, she was like, well, this is my jam then. So it's interesting to see what stories different people kind of find themselves in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Farmhand's definitely for a very particular crowd. You know, the angsty people who have trauma in their past.
Right.
You know, it's a very particular jam that, you know, maybe I mean, I look at Chew versus Farmhand. They're very completely different books for me. And there is some crossover. We have some Chew fans that are Farmhand fans, but there are some Farmhand fans that are not Chew fans. Like they don't, you know, there's a line there at some point.
Stop eating people.
Our buddy, Doug Wagner, the guy that did Vinyl and Plastic and now Plushie. His outtake on everything is you either want them to love it or hate it. You don't want the gray area. Mm. And I pretty much feel that same way. I'd rather just hear you hated it or loved it.
Yeah.
I know you said, going back to what you said before about the, there's still times where like, you don't like what you did. Is that like, that's typical artist mentality, right? Are you still have, after all of your success and all the books, like, you still have the imposter syndrome, or have you finally gotten over it where you're just like, I'm just going to do it regardless, or like, you're constantly still like, am I doing, good? Am I joking?
it's all just one big sigh.
Right.
I don't know if it's imposter syndrome. I just think it's never going to be easy. You know, as a creative, I don't hate what I've done. Like, I look back at the Chew stuff and I don't dislike it. I just, it's just not where I am now. It's not something I could make. I made that when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. You know, I'm 40 now. Like, I couldn't make that today. That's not who I am now.
Yeah.
So you've grown from it. I mean, I've grown up a lot. So I think, you know, I've made peace with it. I'm good with it. You know, I look back at everything I did and I'm like, you know, I look back at it and I like it. And if anything, I'm more kind of proud that I was able to just do the work and put the time in. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, there was never a quit. I never quit. I just kept pushing. Even, you know, when I wasn't completely enjoying what I was doing. But I mean, that's part of the creative process. It's like, you know, I have one good friend who's immensely talented. I've known him since college. One of the most just purely creative guys I've ever met. I mean, everything he does has such joy and just a general love of creating to it. But he has a day job. You know, he doesn't do this full time. And I've talked to him numerous times about, you know, you could do this full time if you really want. And his response is, I don't think I want to, you know? And I think I get it. You know, I love what I do. And I don't really want to do anything else, but there are days where it's hard to kind of separate your love for it from the fact that it is a job. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a push and pull there. That's really difficult sometimes. The goal for me is really not perfection. I know I'm not going to get it. The goal is to just keep pushing is always the goal for me.
Yeah. You hear that, artist? Stop being so hard on yourself. You just got to do it. I feel like that's really what separates people. It's like, is going through the trenches and like one page at a time. Hey, this one didn't work out as great as I wanted, but I got to move on or else I will be on this forever and nothing's going to get done. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Just let it go.
It's just the same with writing where it's just, you know, at the end of the day, this is the story I wanted to tell. Because if I wanted to, I would just sit there and keep going back through it and back through it and back through it and back through it. Maybe I can make this part more commercially viable or whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, just tell the story you want to tell and it'll probably find its audience if you put some effort into it.
Yeah. And it's ultimately not about one page. And it's also not about one book. You know, I always go back to, I was teaching an art class. This has to be like 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, it's for little kids. And as the kids were leaving, one of the moms came in and she was saying, you know, I used to draw back in college or in high school. I was like, cool. You know, she's like, yeah, you know, I have this one drawing that I did. And basically it broke down to she drew one good drawing once, like 20 something years ago. And that was it. And she just walked away and she's like, that was it. You know, for people who are really like really creative, that's not how we roll. Right. Like, it's not about one page. It's not about one thing that you did 20 years ago. It's about, no, I'm going to keep producing regularly, consistently, and maybe not everything is going to be, you know, A plus page or whatever, mm-hmm. but it's about consistently pushing. It's not just about one body of work. It's about like your life's body of work. It's about right, all of right. it together, kind of working together. So it's a different kind of mindset, I guess.
Yeah. Do you still see yourself in Chew? Like if you go back and look through it?
Yeah, but it's so long ago that there are times it's so long ago. Plus I was going so fast. I was doing a page a day. Plus, like I said, a lot of life was going on outside of that book at the same time that I look back at it and I don't remember drawing a lot of it.
Right.
Like, I mean, I look back at, I find like the Easter eggs and stuff like that. Like I'll see stuff as if I have no memory of doing it. And I actually think a lot of it's funny because
that's kind of what I was getting at was the whole, I feel like every creator inevitably you do that. The further away you are from the thing that you did, it's almost like there's a disassociation, like, oh, like you go back through and read a line from some dialogue that you put in there. It's like, oh, that's actually really good. Yeah. Or, yeah. Oh, that was not so great.
Yeah. I mean, I look back even at Chew again, you know, I'm very proud of everything that happened with Chew, but you know, I look back at that first issue and I think, how did this hit? me and John have had conversations about this. My writer in the book, John Lehman, you know, we've talked about, you know, man, like those early issues were really rough looking. Like, how the hell did this thing do what it did? Because, you know, it wasn't bad. It's just, it was so raw. And, mm-hmm. you know, looking at where I am now creatively and looking where I was at by the end of Chew, it's shocking to see, you know, how people connected with it, even at that really kind of rough phase of its creation.
Farmhand, Farmhand's done, right?
Mm-mm.
No,
I have one arc left, so okay, probably okay. five or six issues. It'll be done early or probably middle of next year.
Well, nice. How do you feel? Like, how do you feel closing out something, really a chapter of your life?
Mm. I feel better closing out Farmhand than I did closing out Chew. Just because Chew had a lot of uncertainty. I mean, with Chew, again, it was my first major comic book. I had kind of knocked around the indie scene, done like, you know, an 8-pager here, 10-pager here. Chew number one was the first full comic book I ever did, period. Like to bottom. Like I drew penciled ink and colored it, the entire thing, and did all the design for it. So that was my first one. You know, I cut my teeth on Chew. And, you know, when you work on one thing for 8 years, you get pretty comfortable. You know, it's like, well, this is about as sweet of a gig as you can get in comics. You can work on one book for 8 years straight, 9 to 5. Yeah. It did really, really well. So
that doesn't usually happen anymore.
No, it doesn't. I became so synonymous with that book. You know, whenever I remember early 2016, we always knew it was going to go 60 issues from very early on. When we saw that the sales were there, we said 60 issues, absolutely. You know, we want to do what Why the Last Man, what Transmetropolitan, what those books did. So we knew 2016 was going to be the year we finished it. And at the beginning of 2016, I had a freak out moment because I realized, holy crap, like this is the year this is going to end. And I have no idea what I'm doing next. And again, so much of life had happened. You know, we were just expecting our third child that year. So right as we were finishing up Chew, we had our third child. So, you know, it was just a lot of, what the hell am I going to do? Like, is there a future for me in comics after this is over? So that was terrifying. And trying to, again, this goes back to the whole creativity thing. Because I had always considered myself a very creative person and I had tons of ideas, but it wasn't time for any of those ideas. You know, when I got to all the ideas, the post-it notes and stuff I had written down over the years, when I finally in 2016 pulled them all out and was looking for the next thing, none of them rang true and none of them were what I was looking for. Because that's just, you know, just because you have a great idea, that doesn't really mean anything. It kind of depends. That idea has to line up with where you are in your life in that moment.
Right. Absolutely.
And it didn't. None of them clicked. None of them clicked. And that's when I panicked and said, holy crap. Like, I have no idea. Like, what am I doing next? And then, you know, in that panic, as I sort of gave that up and kind of just let things play out as they would, that's when Farmhand popped up. But, you know, there was still an immense amount of apprehension and uncertainty whenever she was finishing. But now with Farmhand, it's a very different beast. You know, I probably feel as confident as a storyteller as I ever have. It's one thing to just draw a book for 8 years. It's another thing to do 25, 26 issues, you know, writing, drawing, project managing, being the editor, working with the publisher, working with foreign publishers, doing this, doing press, you know, doing all of this over the past, I mean, since 2018 when I started this book. You know, I feel like I've grown immensely and I'm ready for whatever comes next. So it's very exciting actually to finish Farmhand, because for whatever reason I see, and maybe it's because I just hit 40 also, you know, I just turned 40 a couple months ago. So there's a level where I feel like, oh wow, I still feel like I have like my best days ahead of me. And I wasn't quite sure when I finished Chew what was next for me. So I'm excited to finish it.
Beards and Comics Podcast is a production of Catalyst Comics Studio. To get in touch with us, visit catalystcomicsstudio.com or search for Beards and Comics Podcast on Facebook. Hey, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It doesn't sound like much, but it helps a whole lot.